I thought I'd give you an update on how my plant is doing. I mentioned last week that I'm not very good at keeping plants alive, and so when Rob and I were meeting this week, I had him take a look at my plant, and it's showing that the proper budding, so I have been successful at keeping this plant alive, and it should be blooming shortly. So it's working out all right. Today's message is the third in our Lenten reflections. The first one was on prayer, the second one was on fasting, and today's message is on neighbor. And we're looking at the same passage that we looked at when we looked at the neighbor section a few weeks ago when we did the Lenten stations. And I had preached on this text back, almost 8 years ago. We had been working through it in Hebrew class, and I thought it'd be a good opportunity to preach it. So I preached it about 8 years ago when I was a youth pastor in Toronto, and I thought, it's a good passage, let's go with it again. And it really challenged me in a way that I hadn't expect, looking at a text I'd already preached from and looked at, and it's really quite a different message than I preached 8 years ago. And I think that's a good thing to show that my thought is growing and that I've been changed and challenged as a person, that it's not stagnant, that you just don't pull out something the same that was 8 years ago. And I found this text harder to deal with now than I did 8 years ago. And so it's quite a good and interesting experience. Now, I'd like to set the context a little bit before we get right into things. And that has to do with where the passage comes from. And this is Deuteronomy. Now, Deuteronomy is the fifth book in what's called the Pentateuch or Torah in the Hebrew Bible. And it's important to understand what the word Torah means. Now, Hebrew is based upon three root systems for words, just like in English, where you have the word teach. You can have teacher, teaching, teachable. They're all from the same head word, the same root, and that's how Hebrew works as well. Now, for Torah, the head word, the root word, is to teach. That's why I use it as an example. It's to teach. It has to do with instruction. So when we think of laws, or the law, we should think about it as God's instruction, God's guidelines, God's teaching to us. Of course, when God teaches us something, it then flows out and becomes a clear directive on how we should live and how we should act. But the root idea isn't some sort of legalistic harshness. It's about God's instruction of what it means to be his people, how to live in covenant relationship with him. And these are the words of how to live responsibly as a community once you've arrived in the land. How to not use the land as something to exploit other people or push people down, but how to live in relationship with those who might not have access to land. And that's what we're looking at today. Now, you have the heading here in Deuteronomy 23:9 that flows throughout the rest of the passage, and it's called Miscellaneous Regulations. I know the NIV, they put the heading at the top of 24. And this idea of miscellaneous regulations annoys me somewhat, to be honest, because it sounds like, these are just some extra thoughts that are tacked on that I don't know. And so it annoys me. I prefer to think of these as community guidelines. And they might seem perhaps a little bit various when you read through them, but they have a general idea of how to live in community with people, and it's important. One of the other part of setting the context here, it has to do with the social system in the time. This is what's called the Beit Av, or the House of the Fathers. This was the social structure the people lived in. They lived together as a family, and then they had an allotment of land, and they would till that land and harvest, and then they would live within these social protections in the same family. And the different fathers' houses would live then together as clans, and then you have tribes and the people, and that's how it was divided. So if you were outside of the Beit Av, if you didn't have land, then you were vulnerable because you didn't have a harvest to bring in. You didn't have grapes or olives. You were dependent on people's provisions. And this is why we see here the three categories of people who were most susceptible. And those were the foreigners, the widows, and the orphans. Now, the foreigner is sometimes translated differently, sometimes as alien, sometimes as sojourner. It's best to understand these people as those who didn't have access to land. Sometimes they were just in progression from one place to another. Perhaps they were were shepherds, perhaps, but they didn't have access to land and they didn't have the ability to bring in a harvest. So they had to depend on the generosity of others for food and provisions. You have here with the widow is the other class, and she would leave her father's house, her setup of protection, and move into the father's house of her husband. And if he died, then she would potentially be without the social protection of society and, again, would be reliant on the generosity of others. She wouldn't inherit land, and if she hadn't produced an heir for the father line, then she would be quite susceptible to starvation and to death. Now, the orphan is the third category, and it's just like the widow. If they were outside the Beit Av, if they didn't have access to land, then they were susceptible and they were vulnerable. I think of the movie Pride and Prejudice. Oh, wait, sorry, the book. Oh, that's supposed to be a joke. Anyway, and how one of the big themes of the book is how the five girls won't inherit their father's property when he dies. So the mother's obsessed with finding them husbands. And this is kind of a similar situation where they needed, when the father died, they would have been outside of the protection. They wouldn't have had the land anymore. So it's kind of a way to think about perhaps what it's a little bit could have been like then. So we'll look at Deuteronomy 24, 6, and then 10 to 22. And that's on page 289 in your pew Bibles. Good. It is wrong to take a set of millstones, or even just the upper millstone, as security for a loan, for the owner uses it to make a living. If you lend anything to your neighbor, do not enter his house to pick up the item he's giving as security. You must wait outside while he goes in and brings it out to you. If your neighbor is poor and gives you his cloak as a security for a loan, do not keep the cloak overnight. Return the cloak to its owner by sunset so he can stay warm through the night and bless you, and the Lord your God will count you as righteous. Never take advantage of poor and destitute laborers, whether they are fellow Israelites or foreigners living in your towns. You must pay them their wages each day before sunset because they are poor and are counting on it. If you don't, they might cry out to the Lord against you, and it would be counted against you as sin. Parents must not be put to death for the sins of their children, nor children for the sins of their parents. Those deserving to die must be put to death for their own crimes. True justice must be given to foreigners living among you and to orphans, and you must never accept the widow's garment as security for her debt. Always remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God redeemed you from your slavery. That is why I have given you this command. When you are harvesting your crops and forget to bring in a bundle of grain for your field, don't go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigners, orphans, and widows. Then the Lord your God will bless you in all you do. When you beat the olives from your olive trees, don't go over the boughs twice. Leave the remaining olives for the foreigners, the orphans, and widows. When you gather grapes in your vineyard, don't clean the vines after they are picked. Leave the remaining grapes for the foreigners, orphans, and widows. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. That is why I'm giving you this command. Now I'd like to look at this section, or this text in five sections. The first, loans, wages, personal responsibility, justice, and provision. Now the giving of the loan is Deuteronomy 24, 6 and 10 to 13. Now it's a command not to take a millstone. Now millstone was what people used to crush grain to make flour. This was the most basic kitchen utensil that they had, and this was complete access to food. If you took the millstone, they'd be unable to make bread, and that is why it can't be given as a pledge, because it's a thing that is most basic to food and to living, and it would be wrong to take that from a person. You must not take a pledge that so takes away their ability to live that they're absolutely enslaved to you. You must allow them to keep their dignity, to keep what's very important to them. You have the wording in the New Living Translation is a little bit, I'd like to draw out the word nefesh, which I talked about last week, about soul, self, emotion, appetite. And here it says, you'd be giving up, or you'd be taking his very life, his very soul, his very appetite as a pledge. This would be wrong. And if you lend to your neighbor, you must not... you must not go into his house to take his pledge. And this would be to keep the dignity of the person that is in debt and has to provide something to you. That you don't walk into his house and look at all the goods that are possibly there and say, no, I'll take this, I'll take that. The person who is in a situation where they need support from a neighbor, from a friend, is still must maintain their dignity. And the person who's receiving the pledge or who's giving the loan must not take that from the person. We have here, as it continues, that if your neighbor is poor, you must not take the cloak from a person. Now, the cloak is what people use both in the day to clothe themselves and to sleep at night. This is why you're not allowed to take the cloak through the nighttime, because they would have nothing to cover themselves when it's cold outside, and they could possibly freeze. Here you have, lie down in peace, lie down in shalom. And this mirrors that you are not allowed to lie down with the cloak. That's what it says literally, with to take the cloak overnight. You must not lie down with it, because he needs it to lie down with to keep himself warm. And then it says here that if you follow this command, that the person who is receiving the loan will bless you, which is an important part. And then that God will also view the person as righteous. And I really like how the New Living Translation brings this out. It will be righteousness to you before Yahweh, your God. They would be judged as behaving correctly, as behaving as the way God intended them, as covenant people. As we move to the next section, Deuteronomy 24, 14 to 15. The second aspect has to do with protection against exploitation, that the wages must be paid out at the end of each day. Because if the person is poor, they wouldn't, preserving the money to the end of the week, the end of the month, saying that they will pay eventually, would be a hardship for the person. They wouldn't be able to buy bread or grain or what they needed for that night. And here it says again, the word nefesh, the soul, self-emotion, is used in the text. And we discussed that last week and earlier in this passage, and it's something that I think it's quite interesting here. It says you'll be lifting up his nefesh. And often this is translated as making the person happy or bringing joy to his face. And I think it's also possible to think of this as lifting up his appetite, connecting with the appetite of a person. That by providing him the wage at the end of each day, you're actually relieving the hunger that he has after a hard day's work, that you're providing for his needs, for his food. And it's, as a businessman, providing the money when it's due and when it's there is a way to relieve the stress of a person who's counting on the provision at the end of each day, that they don't wonder if you are a corrupt person who's not going to provide what is earned. Verse 14 also provides an important distinction. They're not supposed to decide between the Israelite and the foreigner. They're supposed to treat everyone equal in this respect and to be fair and just. Whether the person is just in the land or in the city, they're supposed to be treated fairly. And if they don't do this, it will be considered sin. It will be considered missing the mark of the commands and the covenant that God has given them. Deuteronomy 24:16 talks about the culpability. Who is responsible for this? And we're going to not linger on this too long, but it's clear from the text that each person is responsible to deal justly and deal rightly. That it's not about what the father does or what other people have done, that each person is responsible to go about and follow these commands for themselves. This is an important theme that's really talked about a lot in Ezekiel 18. It's a very interesting passage there. But I'd like to move on to Deuteronomy 24, 17 to 18. And this is for those who have nothing, no access to the land. They're commanded to give two drashas to the foreigner living among you, to the orphans, and to never accept the widow's garment as security for her debt. The garment, as I mentioned with the person, with the regular or non-widow, could be taken as a pledge and then returned at night. But with the widow, the garment is so important to you, that's so necessary, that she absolutely, or you cannot, absolutely cannot take it as a pledge in her situation. She is so in need of it that that would be wrong for the person to do. Now, true justice is a command for the people to live appropriately and not to favor their Israelites in a situation where the Israelite might have done wrong, but you sow solidarity with your brother and then you turn aside justice and you don't provide it. Here's a command to deal equally with people in situations and to not pervert justice. And the key point here is the command. The reason for this is that they must remember what God did for them. They must remember that he saved them from slavery when they were people who had no rights and no position, when they were in Egypt and they had no land. This is the reason why they're supposed to do this, because God saved them. And it's intertwined. The way that they deal with others is intertwined with what God did for them, because they knew what it was like to be in slavery, to be apart from the land, to not have access to food the same way, not to have access to justice, and to be oppressed. As you see here, the promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob of the land and how they're supposed to live when they're in the land is key. They're not supposed to forget what God has done for them, what God has done bringing them out of Egypt. As we look to Deuteronomy 24:19-22, we have the three key agricultural elements, the grain, the olive, and the grapes. And these would represent the different years, or a different cycle in the year of the harvest. And they're commanded not to turn back when the things fall to the ground. They're not supposed to reach back and grab what they have missed. Because once it has fallen, once they have missed it, then it belongs to the foreigner, to the widow, and to the orphan. When the grain was up and when they were threshing it, it belonged to them. But the moment that it did, the moment it fell to the ground, it no longer belonged to them. There's no specific statement that if nobody's around in the land at the time, or if there's no sojourners among you, then you don't have to worry about it. No, once the grain is missed, once the grapes haven't fallen from the ground, once the olives are still there, it belongs to the sojourners, the widows and the orphans. And in this, the promise is that God will bless the work of their hands. And this isn't a prosperity gospel type of message, that if you just do this, that everything will be great. No, it's that God will bless them and look after them, and that they will be able to live in shalom with him, with creation, with those around them, if they follow this command, if they look after the needs of others, the people who are dependent on their provision. As we bridge to a reflection point as to think about how this might work out, I'd like to make reference to Ruth. Because the book of Ruth actually provides an example of this law in action. When Ruth, who qualifies as both a foreigner and a widow in this situation, she's following exactly what the law provides. She's gleaning what has been missed. And Boaz provides this very interesting and exciting order in Ruth 2:15-16. He says, he orders his young men, "Let her gather grain right among the sheaves without stopping her, and pull out some heads of barley from the bundles and drop them on purpose for her. Let her pick them up and don't give her a hard time." This is Boaz putting Deuteronomy in action as he cares for the foreigner and the widow. And we see how Boaz redeems her and brings her as a wife to provide social protection for her. So in the time of reflection, I'd like to look at two aspects. And they're the questions, the why and the how. The why is clear from the text, that they are a redeemed people, that they are a saved people, that God did a wonderful, miraculous act for them, and they're supposed to act accordingly. They know what it means to live in slavery, to apart from the land, to not have access to things. And out of this place of savedness, out of redemption, they're supposed to then act as God's redemptive people, to help redeem others, to help save and provide protection for others. And it's the same for us. We're supposed to act in love and care out of our own savedness, out of our own position of what God has done for us. Perhaps we can't identify directly with what it's like to be a sojourner, a widow, or an orphan, or in slavery, but there's plenty of situations around us that can move our hearts and help us to identify in those situations. What we can identify with is the great saving act that God has done in our lives and the process that he's moving us in. And it's out of this process, it's out of this act that he's done for us, that we are supposed to serve him and take care of those who are vulnerable in society. We're not saved simply to be saved. We're saved to act out of, as God's covenant renewal people. As in the process that he's making all things new, we're supposed to step in and make all things new in the lives of those who need us most, who are susceptible to oppression. On my Facebook page, under favorite quotes, I have one from Richard Niebuhr in his book, Christ and Culture. And I've always found this quote very, very challenging, and I'd like to share it with you today. It involves the double movement, with men toward God, with God toward men, from the world to the other, from the other to the world, from grace, from work to grace, from grace to work, from time to the eternal, from the eternal to the temporal. And skipping a few paragraphs. Belief in him and loyalty to his cause involves men in the double movement from world to God and from God to world. Even when theologies fail to do justice to this fact, Christians living with Christ in their culture are aware of it, for they are forever being challenged to abandon all things for the sake of God and forever being sent back into the world to teach and practice all the things that they have been commanded them. End quote. Now it's natural when one is in a relationship with God that one wants to press in and just bask in his glory, bask in his love. But it's out of this glory, out of this connection with God that thrusts us back in to meet the needs of others. When our needs are met, it immediately pushes us to think about the needs of others and to identify those who need the same sort of redemption that has just happened in our lives in different situations, not just with salvation, but with food, with protection, with God's grace in those manners. Sometimes the next point I'd like to look at is the how. And this is where we can look at how we can make this element real, that we can provide safety for the vulnerable in a local, national, and international level. It's hard to make a direct comparison because we don't harvest, or most of us don't harvest the same way anymore. And even if we did, it wouldn't fit the exact requirement, because those who are most vulnerable aren't living out in the fields and able to glean behind. We must think of ways where we can put this principle into practice in our own lives, in our own living. One of the key themes of this section is restoring dignity, to not exploit the other person in their areas of most need, not to take the things of theirs that are most necessary, that you cannot live without, not taking the millstone or the cloak overnight. Now, this draws me to think about international debt and the way that loans and wages are paid out. And we're venturing definitely into something that I am not an expert in and still wrestling with and working out. And I'm comfortable talking about how this fits into the Old Testament, but as we venture into this place, it's something that I'm, just working through and reliant on others' wisdom. But there's a system of debt where those who are in need and those who have high debt aren't able to get out of their cycle of debt and out of the cycle of society. The way the system creates so much interest that they will never be able to repay their debt in many of the world's poorest countries. And then, so the cycle of debt, the cycle of oppression continues. Think about just in our own, with the credit card bills now, they say how many years it takes to pay back with just making the minimum payment. And often the minimum payment is actually even less than the interest that would be on the credit bill. And this is, for many, a big hurdle and a big challenge. Also think of a fair trade with where we have the opportunity sometimes to pay a little bit more for the things that we need so that the person on the other end receives a fair wage and a fair opportunity. Now, Leona and I had a chance to debate these things and to think about these things. She wrote her last paper in her studies at the University of Basel on the Millennium Development Goals. And the Millennium Development Goals were set out to try to erase extreme poverty by the year 2015, which is only 3 years away. And Leona had a chance to review these goals and what were happening with them. And she looked at that the different proposals and the different reflections from three popular authors who've written books in the last few years. And there'd be Jeffrey Sachs and don't remember the first names of the other people, Easterly and Collier. And Sack's approach in this is to help people with A to get up on the first step of the ladder. And I'd like to read one of his quotes here, which really stuck out to me when we were discussing things and when I proofread her paper. As global society, we should ensure that the international rules of the game and economic management do not advertently or inadvertently set snares along the lower rungs of the ladder in the form of inadequate development assistance, protection trade barriers, destabilizing global financial practices, poorly designed rules for intellectual property, and the like, that prevent the low-income world from climbing up the rungs of development. One of the ways that we can deal with the most vulnerable is to lobby our governments in positions so that they create laws and trade agreements that are fair for all nations to help them get up to this first rung, this first step to create their own economy. We can also see this situation in our neighborhood to thinking locally. And maybe the best way to filter Deuteronomy 24 into our own lives is to think about it through the lens of Isaiah 58 that we looked at last week. To when we see people in vulnerable need, to see people who are struggling, that we don't turn a blind eye. And that could be the way that we allow our grain, our grapes, and our olives to fall on the ground. As Jesus says, to give a cup of cold water. Perhaps there's someone that lives on your street that you know is a newcomer to Canada, or somebody finds themselves out of work, perhaps formerly at your workplace or at your child's school, or somebody that you've come in contact with, somebody even in this community here, where we can then come alongside them and leave our grain, our grapes, and our olives there for them to glean, and so that they can have access to what they need. Sometimes it's hard to know exactly what to do, but this doesn't justify inaction and passivity. The harvester in Deuteronomy could not just stop doing this. He was commanded to allow his grain to fall on the ground for the foreigners, the orphans, and the widows. Even if they thought it might go to waste, they were still commanded to follow after this plan, to not differentiate, to just behave in this manner. And this is what the essence of the Torah is to take care of those in the community and those around, those who don't have access to the land. As Jesus sums up the two commandments, is to love God and love neighbor. And this is the whole thrust and design of the story. Now, the connection in the summer and moving to the fall, we're going to be birthed out of the different community discussions that we've had, the one that you had here in May before I was here, and the ones that we've had as a Greater Emmanuel community. We're going to be taking these ideas that are already present and trying to put them into practice so that we as a connection community and a Greater Emmanuel community can address some of those needs for the vulnerable, for the foreigner, the orphan, and the widow. How that we can act as people who restore dignity and restore justice, the ways that we can allow our grain, grapes, and olives to fall into the ground. There's a simple way tonight, as we've been doing throughout the Lenten season, to perhaps give some of your pocket change into the jar that's right here. It was one of those things that I tried to do to put this into practice after the first time I preached this message, is that when after Sunday, Leona and I would often go along the beaches in the Scarborough area, and there was always people panhandling there. And I often just tried to throw the change that was in my pocket into what they had. It's just a simple way to let my grain fall on the ground. As we move to respond, as we come to the table, let's allow God to speak to us. Let his word through the Holy Spirit identify in our hearts those who fit the category of the most vulnerable in our lives. Perhaps he'll speak to you, a specific person or a specific need that you're being called to meet, that you're being called to allow your grain, your grapes, or your olives to fall into the ground. As you come to the table, we think of Jesus' great sacrifice, his humbling of himself completely and his giving for us, the symbol of his death, eventual resurrection, which pushes us forward to be agents of resurrection in people's lives. So as you come, think about Jesus' servanthood, how he gave his life as a ransom to many. Think about how you can be in the process of restoring dignity to those around you.